This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
When bloggers or influencers post their outfit links, 9 times out of 10, I click on it and immediately exit because the price is bananas. It wasn't until recently that I clicked on something expecting it to be the usual out of my price range sweater, and it was under $60 at Quince. Quince has become my ultimate destination for luxury essentials that won't break the bank. Let me tell you about some of the gems I found at Quince. From their 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters starting at just $50 to their washable silk tops and dresses, organic cotton sweaters, and stunning 14 karat gold jewelry, Quince offers a range of high quality items at prices that are truly within reach. And here's the best part. All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Give yourself the luxury you deserve with Quince. Go to quince.com/shrinkchicks for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/shrinkchicks to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/shrinkchicks.
Welcome to Shrink Chicks.
I'm Emily Beerley.
And I'm Jennifer Chaikin.
And we're licensed marriage and family therapists and owners of the Therapy Group.
We're on a mission to make therapy and therapeutic topics more relatable and accessible.
So stay tuned, because in order to grow yourself, you gotta know yourself.
Hello!
Hey!
We're bringing back a Q&A episode.
Well, you know what? A lot of people had kept asking for it, so we were like, we're gonna do it. And also, we didn't prep anything for today.
So that's what we do when we don't prep anything.
So when we don't prep, we say, Nikki, throw up a question box. The issue with this one was, you ever seen so many questions in your life?
No, never.
Man, we got some cool listeners.
It makes me really happy because people want to know what we think.
Yes, which is silly to me.
So me too. God knows why.
So the good news is, our wonderful Nikki, how good was your episode?
Oh my God, it was incredible. I was just going to interrupt because I was thinking yesterday about us doing Q&A episodes. And do you remember like in magazines where... Remember magazines, first of all?
Yeah, and it was like Ask the Boy.
Yeah, or
it
like...
Was it Ask the Dude or something?
Yeah, there was like some sort of like column where you would like... And I loved reading those.
Yeah, but I feel like the original was Dear...
Someone.
What's it called? Nikki, do you know? Dear Abby.
Dear Abby.
It's Dear Abby.
Yeah, this
kind of... actually, I believe if there is still have Dear Abby in newspapers, but it's like her like niece or something now. Like if you look, it says.
Interesting. Do you think that's something her niece wanted to do, or she felt like she had to take over the family business?
I would be thrilled to take over that family business.
I mean, we kind of did.
That's true. So, Dear Emily and Dear Jen.
That's beautiful.
Dear friends. Okay.
I mean, we do that segment. Okay.
All right. So there were so many questions that came in. Nikki put them into categories, and we're sure to choose life transitions because we're kind of in one ourselves.
Yes.
We have a lot happening with the business. We have lots of new people coming on.
And also, essentially, aren't we always in a life transition?
Wow.
I know.
Yeah. So let's do life transitions today. So we're going to do a Q&A, life transitions, things you guys wrote in. If we didn't get to yours today, we are going to take all of these and start doing
and
Q&As
more
often
more episodes because we don't want to prepare for other things.
That's true. That's true. We do that. That's actually not a lie right there. Okay. So where to start? You ready?
Yep. Do you want me to start with the first question or you want to start?
You start.
Okay. You got it, sister. First one, redefining your identity and sense of self after becoming a mom. Where to start? Okay, it's a good thing I asked this one because this is this is for you.
When you got your pets, but let's talk about this because we've had this conversation that like we both, when we got our dogs, went through like a very similar like
depression,
a bit of, like a postpartum.
And I
was like, what did I do to my life? I can never leave again. Now I'm stuck in this house. Why would I do this?
See, the thing was, I didn't even, there weren't necessarily thoughts that were coming with the feelings that I was feeling after we got our dog. I was just went into a deep depression without knowing why. But I think that just when there's any sort of intense adjustment, you know, it just like throws off your equilibrium. You're so used to doing something.
So I think like, so we're talking about like redefining your identity and sense of self. I think one of the things we have to say to yourself is like, what was I using to define my identity before? Mm-hmm. Because it's very true. If one of the ways I defined my identity was being child free and a partier, well, it's probably not going to work so well with this new identity. If one of the ways I defined my identity was through working 80 hours a week, well, it's true. It's probably not going to work as well. So the first thing I want you to know is, who was I prior and how did I define that identity?
And what did that identity give to me? Right? Like, what was it about that identity, right? If you're like, oh, I'm someone who works 80 hours a week, is there some pride in that where you're like, hey, listen, I work a ton and I'm proud of what I do?
Do you ever feel like people, because there's like listeners from all over.
Yeah.
Sometimes it feels like the things that we talk about may be personal to the Northeast area.
Oh, you think?
Do you think everyone does this insane amount of like addiction to work?
I don't
know. Maybe they do. Maybe it's all of Western society.
Northeast area, or maybe it's just us.
Okay, well, that's definitely possible. But you don't think, but you,
I don't know. If you're listening to this and
Pennsylvania, New Jersey,
you don't
New
live
York,
in the Northeast and you all are also addicted to work, you let us know.
Right? Like, so I'm just wondering. But
I don't know.
But
I was just using that as an example of, you know, if it's something where you're like, right, I guess it, in the Northeast, if everyone's like, oh, yeah, I work a lot or I work a lot, right? It's like this competition about who's hustling more.
Yes, an addiction.
Right?
Addiction.
There's like some sort of pride that comes with it sometimes, even though it's wearing us the fuck out. Mm-hmm. That if when you have a kid or you have a dog or and it takes away from that, what are you losing? What did that identity give to you in the past that you feel like is being taken from you, so to speak?
Yeah.
How is that affecting you now? What can this new identity give to you? Right?
So I feel like for me, right, like a big part of my identity before being a mom and before and always and still now is like being a very good friend, right? Like, it's like I try to always show up for my friends, be very
You are
available.
Such a good friend.
Well, I'm not as much anymore. And
I disagree with that.
Thank you. I love you. Okay. But one of the things was, right, like, it's just harder for me. Like, it's harder for me to get to all the stuff. Like, I want to be there for bedtime. You know what I mean? Like, I already, it's hard because I work a lot. And so then, like, the time that I'm not, like, I really do want to be with my kid. And so that's really hard. And people are like, oh, I haven't seen you in so long. Will you, like, please come to this thing? And I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that.
Also, I have to say, having a kid is a great excuse to not do things. Well, I know you're very extroverted, but I'm like, ah, God, I don't have, I'm like, oh, my cat's crazy. I got to stay home tonight.
But like, here's the thing. Like, it's not an excuse. Like, I genuinely want to be with my kid. My kid's like hilarious.
Right.
How funny is my kid?
The greatest. Right. We so, really like, bonded,
right?
By the way.
Yeah. Also, you guys had a good weekend together.
I slept at Emily's house
this weekend unintentionally.
For the first time.
Well, your husband was supposed to drive home, and then all of a sudden we saw him with a glass of bourbon, and then all of a sudden,
no,
I was like, "You're welcome to my guest room."
Your guest room was so comfortable.
Thank you. But you had already brought the dog, so it was a very easy
thing
to just
sleep. And you know what? I don't define myself as someone who sleeps over people's houses. And so I had to redefine myself in those moments as someone who now has adult sleepovers.
Yeah, you were like, I guess I'm going to have to be flexible for safety. I mean, you guys could not drive home.
No, there was no chance.
Yeah.
But you know what I was also thinking, like something about...
We do not endorse drinking and driving.
Not at all. Something about, like the podcast, for example, we've had to kind of define ourselves in a lot of ways, right? Like I did a whole episode about being child free. It's like I'm the child free one.
Yeah, you are the child
free. You're the one with the
kid.
Yeah. And it's like, if I am not questioning this, but if I were to ever be like, oh, actually, I want to have a kid.
Oh, but people think you're like a
Yeah, I would have to redefine my entire identity.
I wonder who that would disappoint, too.
Probably a lot of people.
Right? Like, all these people are like, oh, but Jen was so sure of her child-free stance. Now, all of a sudden, she's going to have a kid, right? So it's true. So if you define yourself as the one who's always available for work or always available for your friends, and then you become a mom or something else happens in your life, where the hell am I going to start to figure this out? So what I want you to look at, where you defined before, what that did for you, how that protected you, what was the function behind that, and how could that work in addition to motherhood, right? It doesn't have to be that it's ignored because of motherhood, but it's going to have to be adjusted in some ways.
It changes.
And it goes into another really good question that somebody said that I want to actually pull at the same time because I like
Please.
Them together. And which was, boyfriend and I want to get engaged and have kids soon, but I'm afraid to lose current lifestyle, money, and freedom. Right? And I think that these go together because there is a lot of fear about, like, what is going to happen when we go? One, what's going to happen when all of a sudden we don't have free- when you have a kid, it really does change. You can't just, like, go out to eat. You're like, oh, wait, because they got bedtime or something. Right? Like, things happen. So it's true. It does shift. And there's grief in that. There's grief in who I was before this transition in my life, and there's grief afterwards. And so what would that look like? So one of the things you have to say is, like, things will be different with my partner and I. There's no way to pretend like they're not going to be.
I was also going to say, I think there's something about, right, like, of course there's going to be fear with transitions because it's the unknown, right? Like, even if we use the example of, oh, I work 80 hours a week and that's my identity and it's wearing me down, at least you know what's happening, right? Yeah. Like, you're very comfortable in the known, and we're very uncomfortable with not knowing. And so a lot of it too is, what does this new identity even look like, right? Like, what does it even look like for me to become a mom or move in with my significant other or get married or, you know, have pets? I don't even know what that looks like. And so to not know can be really terrifying for us and our brains.
Because our brains want to know.
Our brains want to know. It feels safer. Our brains
do not like that.
Right. And so I think that that's a bit, our brains
they
do not.
They
are
say
not
no, thank you.
Happy.
That's going to be a no for me, dog. That's what my brain says, right? And so this thing of, like, okay, so it's going to be different and it's going to be unknown. So how would we handle it, right? And so then you start to think about, like, what are some ways we could prepare for this? When we talk about preventative therapy, it's also like, all right, I know I have a big life transition happening. What could this look like? What are some things to prepare for?
So what, can I ask you a question?
We are being recorded right now, so my answer is going to have to be yes.
Right. If you said no, like, what would we do?
Silence.
Just end it. Did you do anything to mentally prep for the transition of becoming a mom?
I will say this. Because of all the infertility stuff we went through before, I do not think I was, because I in some ways had detached. I did not know what it was going to look like, and I was very concerned about attaching to my unborn child if she was not going to make it.
That makes sense.
Right? Because so, if you remember my 20-week ultrasound,
oh yeah,
we got some alarming news, right? And that alarming news was like your child may have serious issues and may have cognitive,
right? Like, I do remember that.
So like, so there was a part of me that froze in that time, and I didn't know how to attach. So I think, like, now I would be in a very different place if I was to, like, ever get pregnant again or be pregnant, to be like, okay, how would I approach this? What would this look like with two? Like, it'd be much easier to wrap my head around. But no, I didn't go there the first time, and I'm not going to recommend that.
Well, I wonder, because of, which make, that makes total sense, yeah, right? Where you're like, I have to emotionally separate myself from this just in case anything happens.
And I've heard about that from a lot of people that have had miscarriages and infertility stuff.
It makes so,
like,
much sense.
That you, like it is a self-protective.
It's protective for you. And so did you have to do most of your adjusting to the transition after you had Millie?
I did. And I think that the biggest adjustment is, like, in your marriage, right? Which was that it really felt like his life did not change. Because this podcast is coming from the United States, where we don't have any type of family leave because we hate everyone, apparently, and don't give a shit about parents or women or children or anyone, frankly. So, like, one of the things is that, like, you know, like, my partner didn't have any type of leave. Mm-hmm. I worked for myself, so I took the time off. But, like, he went back to work when she was, like, 3 days old, and then he started traveling again. Like, his boss didn't care that he had, like, a newborn at home. He had to go on work trips. So I think, so I think the hardest part was that, like, it really felt like his life did not change, where my entire life was different. My body was different. My mind was different. My schedule was different. And so the harder part was that, like, that is a very isolating situation to be in.
You know, and I think a lot of women feel that way.
I think that's true.
And I think the tough thing is that, like, no one really talks about it. You know, like,
people
no
talk about it's gonna be hard and it's gonna be,
but they don't, like, tell you why.
That's the thing. It's like everyone talks about, like, it's, oh, you're gonna be so tired, but, like, I feel like people don't talk enough about, like, what you're really tired from is, like, the emotional and invisible, like, load, what they call is, like, the invisible load of motherhood.
And they don't talk about how I don't think they really talk about what happens in your marriage.
No.
And
I don't
transition.
Think people want to admit it. And I think so when anytime someone's,
I think it,
like,
feels like,
oh,
shame.
No, it was great for a marriage. I'm like, I don't believe you.
Like, I think if there's a lot of shame that comes with that, right? Where
and
it
I
feels
don't think
like,
I was able to verbalize. I don't think I was able to verbalize that in my marriage until, like, Millie was, like, probably one.
You think it's because you were, like, in this survival mode of, like, we gotta get through this?
I guess I just felt I think I just pulled a martyr. I think I was just like, oh, this is like how it is, and this is motherhood, and this is supposed to be. So when we talk about like what is your identity before motherhood and afterhood, like I think that this is a part of it, and we could use that. Let's take motherhood out of it. Let's talk about a new job, a new relationship. Like identities change throughout time.
And that, and then you change throughout time,
yeah.
Right? Like your circumstances, and this is why we always talk about like growing together in your relationship as opposed to growing apart, and mm-hmm. what it takes to grow together, yeah. because you're going through transitions with yourself. Your partner might be going through transitions. Your kid might, you know, that like everyone around you is constantly going through transitions, which yeah. brings me back to my original sentiment of like, aren't we always going through transitions?
Yeah, we are.
And to almost expect to stay in one place, you know, it makes it a little bit tougher. There's like resistance towards any sort of transition if there's an expectation of I'm supposed to stay in one place. You're really not.
Well, and it's also like then you're not affected by any system around you, right? So like we talked about, like we're systemic therapists. We believe that everything happens within context and systems. So if you're telling me your identity is always the same, you're too rigid and you're literally losing the system around you.
Mm.
Systems change and we change with it. And that is simply how this world works.
If you listen to one of our latest episodes titled Em and Jen Fall Apart, you know the current feelings of burnout that we're both facing. Running our business, the therapy group, keeping up with the podcast, and enduring a house renovation leaves little time for grocery shopping, meal prepping, and cooking. So we are extremely thankful for our sponsor, Hungry Root. When I received my first delivery of the Hungry Root box, it felt like a breath of fresh air. Hungry Root saves me so much time and offers customizable options. Plus, with perfectly portioned ingredients, I'm wasting far less food than I would if I were left to my own devices in the kitchen. No more throwing away wilted veggies or expired condiments lurking in the back of my fridge. Each order is fully customizable, so you can take their suggestions or choose anything you want. They've got fresh produce, high quality meat and seafood, smoothies, sweets, ready to eat meals, kids snacks and meals, vitamins and supplements, and much more. I discovered Three Little Pigs, spinach, feta, and egg bites in my last delivery, and they are my new obsession. Also, Hungry Root's coconut curry sauce is not to be missed. Everything from Hungry Root follows a simple standard. It's got to taste good, be quick to make, and contain whole trusted ingredients. Right now, Hungry Root is offering Shrink Chicks listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks. Don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you. Can you believe we're on year 5 of Shrink Chicks? We have been podcasting since 2019 and have somehow yet to change the photo of us on the cover of the podcast. We are planning a photo shoot in a few weeks so we can finally update our cover art. We both obviously need new outfits for the photo shoot, but really didn't want to break the bank. So thank goodness for Quince, where we can get multiple high-quality outfits for a very reasonable price. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach. For the shoot, we want to go with a few different looks, one being monochrome, so I opted for a few key items from Quince's collection, including their Mongolian cashmere tee, classic trouser pant, and structured blazer. I couldn't resist adding their timeless 14 karat gold jewelry pieces to complete my look, because who doesn't love accessorizing? The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, making me feel even better about my purchases. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/shrinkchicks for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/shrinkchicks to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/shrinkchicks.
So we could talk about like why is it hard for just us as human beings to accept the fact that we change or accept the fact that things change around us?
Mm-hmm.
And I would think it's, you know, just like a primal need for safety.
Yeah.
Right. And safety is structure. Safety is things staying the same. Right. If you think about, I mean, once again, I'm not a parent. I don't know a ton about parenting, but from what I know,
you are a parent. I am telling you, whenever someone's like, oh, it's not the same having a dog as a baby, I felt very similar.
Thank emotions. You. So what I know from having a dog is that they need structure, and there's boundary, and there's safety in knowing what they're getting, right? And so I think, you know, we all just have children inside of us that are like, I need to just know that things are going to stay the same, or there's this structure in some way. And that in and of itself gives us a sense of safety. But because our lives and people around us and our systems are constantly changing, it's almost an essential skill to be able to adjust and mm-hmm. to adapt to that change. And so just know, if you're taking anything out of this long-ass rant that we're going on, that it's a natural part of life to go through these transitions, and adaptation is part of that as well.
Okay, next question. I'm getting married next fall. Any tips, things to avoid? However much money you think you should spend on this wedding, you should... Don't
do it.
The number one thing we hear from people is, why did I spend that much money on the wedding? I
think, and by hear from people, she means what we say to each other.
What we say to each other, and also, no, I think a lot of people say that, right? Nikki, do you think you should have spent that much money on your wedding? Absolutely not. Every person in this area is saying no. So, yeah, flowers are very expensive. But here's what I would say. You were spending thousands of dollars for one day, and the amount of people that think premarital counseling and couples counseling is too expensive, one of them is 24 hours, one is the rest of your life. So spend the money on when you are doing the budget, spend the money on couples therapy. Talk about all of the shit. Take out what we talked about before, is we have had other episodes where we talked about like conscious and unconscious contracts. If there is something you are thinking your partner will do when you're married, do not think it, assume it, speak it. So if you think because you're getting married, he's going to not go out and drink every single night, you better actually say those words. I'm assuming this is true, right? If you are thinking that she's going to want to have kids because you guys got married, you better say those words out loud. So
the
number one thing I think is say is like, start talking about stuff, not just what venue, not just what photographer. People are focusing on the wrong things.
They're focusing more on the wedding than the marriage. Yes. And that's, in a bigger sense, the most important thing is the marriage, not necessarily the wedding. There's so much hype around the wedding.
Yeah.
And if we're going to talk about, right, I'm getting married next fall, any tips, things to avoid? Okay. So I think we assumed that this was about the wedding. I'm kind of assuming that this question is about the wedding and not the marriage.
I don't know.
Right? I'm getting married. I don't know. So if we take that assumption.
Well, I mean, okay. So any tips? Talk about every single thing that you are making assumptions about in your relationship. Are you saying those out loud and having a conversation? And a really great tip you can do to do this is called metacommunication. We communicate about the communication where you say, I noticed that we haven't really talked about having kids. Should we talk about that? I've noticed that we haven't talked about how your mom has come to every single vendor meeting. Should we talk about that?
Yes. You're talking right. about all of the things that you're not talking about.
Yes.
I would say tips for the wedding, though. What tips would you give for the actual wedding? Because I have thoughts.
Drink water and eat.
Drink water and eat. I love that. But well, I would say.
What's yours?
Well, I'm going to say listen to yourself throughout this entire process of wedding planning.
Okay, can I bring something up? You might get mad at me, though.
Oh, God. Oh, no. Okay, it's okay. Do it.
You can edit it out if you don't like me to show this up for the record.
Tell me.
When you first went to try on wedding dresses.
Yes.
You loved a dress and your mom didn't like it.
Yes.
Do you wish you went with that dress?
No.
Okay. You looked hot in it, though.
I know.
Your boobs look great.
Thank you. that was really hard for me.
That was hard,
I
right?
also made it a point.
You went by yourself.
I went all of my wedding, did all my wedding dress shopping by myself. I also didn't have bridesmaids. I did not have a bachelorette party.
Bridal shower.
I made it a specific point to say.
That's because you saw how horrible my experience was.
Yes.
I was so anxious. Not that my, like, I had a lovely experience.
Great time.
So a beautiful thing. But the idea of everyone about me was too overwhelming.
When we were at Emily's.
I had a panic attack.
Bachelorette party. She pulled me aside. She was like, I can't do this. Like, it's just, and so I kind of.
I was sobbing in the shower. I was so overwhelmed.
I kind of knew this about myself too, that like, even if people were like, this is about you, whatever you want, I would not be able to set those boundaries for myself. I'd be so concerned about everyone else.
Yeah.
So in order to set those boundaries, I said, I'm not having bridesmaids. I'm not, because it's just going
to. The best gift you ever gave us.
So the one thing I did was I went wedding dress shopping one time with my mom. And
the rest was about yourself.
And the rest was about me because, you know, I wanted it to be about me. And she didn't like this dress that I really liked. And it was so hard for me. Like, I had a really, really tough time with that because it was like the one thing that I didn't want to infiltrate that process. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I was kind of doing it for her.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted her to be, you know, in the process. But I'm still kind of happy I didn't go with that dress. But I probably wouldn't have been able to breathe in the end. That's why my tits looked so good.
It was like a full corset.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, that was really, really hard. So I would say it's so easy and it happens so often that other people make your wedding about them.
Yes.
And
it's a lot about pleasing other people.
It's a lot about pleasing other people.
Oh, your grandmother is important for it to be in a church.
Right.
Oh, you need a seven-piece band to do it. Yes.
And so, but if that's not what you want, right, and you get to make those decisions, it's important to assert the things that are important for you if it's really your day. And it's so, I think with social media too, there's a lot of pressure around you need to be doing it this way. You need to have this many people.
Although I think that COVID really helped normalize elopement and micro weddings, and I am here for that.
Would you have done a micro wedding?
If I was to go back and do it again, I would totally do a micro wedding. There's this place in the Poconos called Promise Ridge that I have never been to. I just love them on Instagram. And it's like this beautiful spot. You only have like 15 people. And I'm like, oh, that's what I would do if I was to do it again. I would
have
a micro wedding.
So intimate, right? It's like an intimate experience. And
so, I loved my wedding, but I would have done it differently.
Yeah. I think everyone feels that. That's another thing too, is that like you're planning so much. There's only so many times in your life that you have so much time to think about one event, right? I was also thinking, like, you know, when you're pregnant, you have 9 months to think about giving birth.
Poof.
That's a long time to think about something.
And be anxious about it.
Yeah, exactly. So like the hype around it, just know like it's not going to be perfect.
Yeah.
And to remember, it's not necessarily about the wedding. It's about the marriage.
And unless it's like the craziest shit ever, like a pelican comes in holding a dead arm and throws up on your aisle, like no one's remembering it. Like it would have to be like the craziest thing ever for it to actually snow. Is that too much? You guys gonna edit that out now?
Absolutely not.
That's the great, like, why would that be the thing that happens?
I was thinking, like, you know, a dead body, you know, because we live in Philly, right?
A pelican comes,
you know, in the springtime.
We live in Philly, so this shit happens all the time.
It's a lot of dead bodies that come up with them, you know.
Right, all the dead bodies that come up.
I was thinking, like, a pelican.
And all the pelicans. That we hang out with.
I'm just saying, it would have to be like the most extreme thing for anyone to really remember. Besides that, nobody does. I can't even like tell you about any wedding I've gone to in like the past 5 years.
Same.
Right? And sorry, yours was one of them. And so was mine.
Probably because we were drinking.
That's probably a good point.
Could maybe be a piece of it.
Yeah, sober person. Okay.
Hopefully that was helpful.
Hopefully a pelican doesn't come with a dead arm.
But do you think someone's listening to this? They're like, oh my God, that happened.
What if that happened, you send me an email because we're going to send you merch.
Yeah, you need merch. You need something. Yeah.
Anyone else go through soap and cleaning products insanely quick? At both my house and at our business, we're constantly replacing plastic bottles. Did you know that an estimated 5 billion plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles are thrown away each year? And if that's not bad enough, most cleaning formulas are 90% water, which is heavy to ship, leading to excessive carbon emissions. That's why we are thrilled to introduce our newest sponsor, Blue Land. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and the planet with the same powerful clean you're used to. The idea is simple. They offer refillable cleaning products with a beautifully cohesive design that looks great on your counter. Fill your reusable bottles with water, drop in the tablets, and wait for them to dissolve. You will never have to grab bulky cleaning supplies on your grocery run. Refills start at just $2.25. You can even set up a subscription or buy in bulk for an additional savings. From cleaning sprays to hand soap, toilet bowl cleaner, and laundry tablets, all Blueland products are made with clean ingredients you can feel good about. And I'll be honest, I was a bit skeptical at first. Can eco-friendly products really tackle tough messes? Well, Blueland proved me wrong. The products I received, like their multi-service cleaner and bathroom cleaner, were powerful. Grime, grease, and dirt don't stand a chance. Blueland is not only good for the planet, but also for your wallet. And the starter kit I received was beautifully packaged. The bottles are sleek and sturdy, and the scents are amazing. Lemongrass, lavender eucalyptus, and fresh lemon, or you can choose fragrance-free. Blueland has a special offer for listeners. Right now, get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/shrinkchicks. You won't want to miss this. blueland.com/shrinkchicks for 15% off. That's blueland.com/shrinkchicks to get 15% off. Anyone else feel like a business class required in your schooling curriculum would have been massively helpful? Because same. We went to school to become therapists, and here we are 10 years later, really noticing the void in our knowledge on the business side of therapy, which is why we love our Masterclass membership. Masterclass has truly increased our confidence in running our therapy practice, The Therapy Group. Pros like Chris Voss, Robin Roberts, Daniel Pink, and Mark Cuban have filled that void and taught us so much about decision making, negotiating, maximizing our time, and effective communication. This year, you too can learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Don't just talk about improving. Masterclass actually helps you do it. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. masterclass.com/shrinkchicks.
Advice for my mid-20s. I've never been in a relationship, but I want to be. Feeling like crap about it. Okay. I have to say, one, I think we have to normalize this for a minute. I think this is more common than this person might realize.
I would agree.
And there is nothing at all wrong with you. But you're right. We live in a world that is like people getting together very young ages. We like glorify high school sweethearts, which we think
We also glorify being in a relationship. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. where like that's the goal. The goal is to be in a relationship. And my question was going to be like, what about it's making you feel like crap? Like, is it the pressure around being in a relationship, the idealized version of what it means to be in a relationship? Do you want a partner? What does that look like for you? To kind of ask yourself questions around like, what parts of it do I feel like I'm missing? Is it really about me? Or is it about other, you know, kind of social norms and all the shit I'm seeing on social media and feeling like you're not involved or you can't participate in that? What are the things that you feel like you would want out of a relationship? And what things that you feel like you might want, are there things about that that you can give to yourself in other ways?
Yeah. I would just be aware of the systems around you that are feeding you this information, right? When there is any type of story that makes you feel bad, the story that I should be in a relationship, I should be married, I should do this, those are stories and they're coming from heteronormative cis, like, right? Like, that there is a function of like a socially constructed idea of what is happiness and what is fulfillment. And so you have to talk back to those stories that like you were in your real story right now. It's not somebody else's. This is your real life experience. And I want you to like greet that with like curiosity, exactly what Jen's talking about. Like, what would work for me? Not what should I be doing?
And let me just say, your future self, when you if you do get into a relationship, you might look back and be like, I wish I appreciated those times that I was
being single a little longer. I think that all the time.
That's not anything we think.
That's every married person. I think that's every married person.
Agree. Yeah, it is.
Right? That like, oh, like, remember when you used to just like not have to worry about someone else, not worried about shit being put away, right? Like, I think there is.
Grass is always greener.
The grass is always greener. All right. How do I balance multiple life shifts? Job, moving, marriage, pregnancy. Mm. Wow, you're really throwing it all at once.
Right? Like, might as well. Woo! Hitting four birds with one stone. Probably not a good saying.
Well, I don't know. My pelican might need
some. Your pelican's saving lives. Or I don't know. I don't know what they're doing.
I don't think it is. Okay. Here is my first thought. This is a ton. So one is normalization of how overwhelming this is. And it's not forever. So that sometimes you have to say to yourself, this is temporary. It is not permanent. What do I need? And the part of that is finding the rock within yourself. If I am experiencing a ton of identity, of system, of situational changes, there has to be some type of rock within me. At the end of the day, I am still Emily. Even if my job changes, even if I move, even if I'm married, even if I'm pregnant, what is parts of my identity that I hold on to that does not shift and change within these? You're making a joke. You're looking at me like you're gonna make a joke.
The rock thing. On YouTube. The rock within me.
The rock within me.
My thought that came up is like, I don't know. This is so stupid. About the Pelton, aren't you? No,
the pelican.
What's the thing where like you can't pee because you have like a
UTI?
No, it's like
kidney stone.
A kidney stone. That's what it made me think of.
So find your kidney.
The
stone.
Rock within me.
Well, what would you say?
Okay, so yes.
How would you balance multiple life shifts?
Okay, well, I'm thinking about like when you have a lot going on, your mind goes into I have to do this, and it's like going into all of the different domains of like, oh, I'm moving. I have to like pack all my stuff. I'm pregnant. I have to think about like setting up the baby's room or whatever. Your mind's going into a million different directions. And I think that it might be helpful if you slow yourself down and say, okay, let me write some of these things out or let me structure them in a certain way where I can focus on one thing at a time. And I think it's so easy when we're overwhelmed to think about the big picture and say, oh, I have all of this stuff to do. How can you just look at the first step in front of you, right? To slow yourself down and say, okay, what is the first thing I have to do right now? As opposed to like, here are all the things I have to do, because that can be so overwhelming. And once again, normalizing your experience, like it's pretty overwhelming to be doing all of those things at once. It's a lot. And so I'm just thinking about what that must be like and your mind going in a million different directions and wanting to get everything done, wanting to be on top of things. But know that, just as Emily said, this is a period of time in your life. And if you could just focus on the first step as opposed to the entire staircase.
Mm-hmm. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
This is a tough one. We're going to send this person a lot of love, man.
Okay.
This person wrote in, I'm on a grief journey. 3 years since my sister and only sibling passed. And I still find myself getting frustrated with myself that I'm not where I'm supposed to be based on societal expectations around grief. I try to give myself grace often where I'm in the depths of my grief, but what would be a good way to stop putting expectations around my grief?
Yeah, we are sending you so much love.
Yeah.
I
think you said something so important here, which was the societal expectations.
Yeah.
Right? So the thing is, it is so true. We're expected to get over stuff so quickly. And I will say that also Western society is like one of like the few societies that sucks, but no, but also that we don't have like repeat like grieving ceremonies, right? So like it's very common in one indigenous communities and other cultures to have like an honoring day like that goes on, that like you're not just over it after the funeral.
Yeah.
And so like you're right, like it is totally a societal expectation. Get over it. Be done. Haven't you moved on? Oh, she's in a better place, or whatever horrible things we say to people.
Right. And I think too, you know, when someone first passes, there's so much love around you, right? Like everyone comes to your house. If you're Jewish, there's a Shiva. Mm-hmm. If I don't know what happens another, you know.
That's well, I
there's
feel,
a
yeah.
But there's a lot of love surrounding you. People are making you things. They're checking in on you. And I think after some time, people stop checking in on you, right? And you're like, oh, you know, as people kind of pull away or they forget about it or they're not bringing it up as much, you know, like 3 years after someone dies, people aren't saying to you like, oh, how are you doing with that? And so I think sometimes as the support pulls away, we start to develop this expectation of, oh, because people aren't asking me about it, it means I should actually be getting over this, when that is not true. Grief is such a process. It is a long, long process that you continue to go through, and different emotions get brought up throughout that process, and everyone grieves in different ways. And so just because the support is no longer there or no longer coming to you, it does not mean that you have to be over it in some way, or that you can't be hysterically cry over the passing of your sibling. That is so hard to lose that in your life. It really, really is. And you know, I think something to think about is just because support isn't coming to you, you are still allowed to reach out and be like, hey, I know it's been 3 years, but I just want to let you know, like, I'm still really struggling with this. Can we hang out? Because I'm having a really tough day.
There's a great organization called The Dinner Table. Do you have anyone who's used this before?
No.
Which is really cool. And so it used to be in person. I do believe they're currently virtual, as many things are right now. But it used to be like in different cities, like you sign up for like a dinner table and it's all people that are grieving. And so you go to these events, it's like a potluck, and you talk about the person you've lost, and it's all other people that have also lost somebody. And so it's a way of being like, oh, how do I bring it to the dinner table? Like it's not the same. It's not is acceptable everywhere. So this is a grief center place. So it's called The Dinner Table. So if you have lost someone or interested,
we should link it
and connecting. Oh yeah, we'll do a swipe up and make sure people put in the show notes and stuff.
I also wonder too if, you know, in your family, if your family is no longer talking about the grief, or if other people are
going, friends aren't checking in.
Yeah, if no one's right, or if your family, you know, the people are also going through a similar grief. Or maybe no longer talking about it, just because people are no longer bringing it up doesn't mean that you can't bring it up and say like, hey, I'm still really struggling with this. And knowing within yourself that it's okay that you're still going through this, it might be there. It might be there for the rest of time. Mm-hmm. You know, it might be something that comes up in different ways or gets triggered or you see a picture. And that's okay to allow yourself to feel the feelings that are coming up in space that feels safe for you.
We're almost at the end of our time, but we were going to answer something, but let's do what's the path to becoming an LMFT, because a bunch of people asked about this.
Okay.
Okay. Nikki's looking at me like I shouldn't be doing this one. Yeah. Is that okay? I'm like, wait, did I miss something?
I'm okay.
So because a bunch of people asked it, and I feel like a lot of people have asked, if you want to become an LMFT, that is what Jen and I are. You're going to go to undergrad for something. Frankly, it doesn't really matter what, but you know, a nice psychology of human development always works at undergrad. And you're going to have to take some type of statistics and abnormal psychology to get into the program.
Yeah. So if you do that in undergrad, it can transfer into your graduate school.
Yeah. But like, let's say you went to school for like, I don't know, engineering or something. You're going to have to also make sure you take abnormal psych and statistics.
Which let me tell you, we don't use statistics at all.
Well, you also just told everyone that we barely read. So.
Did I?
That's not true. I'm in a night class. I have to read freaking research every week because of this effing night class I'm in. Which I would like to say for the record, I'm in a virtual night class, and I got in trouble for chewing gum last week.
Oh my God.
With my mic off.
How are you chewing?
I don't think like that obnoxiously.
Like, show me your mouth. Show me the mouth. That's not bad. Could be right. I was picturing you like,
I don't. Do I chew gum?
No.
See me chew gum.
Actually, I don't think I've ever seen.
Neither
have
I. Just happened to be.
I was wondering. Like,
it was on my desk, and I was like, "Oh, gum."
Don't.
I don't. I was like, "Oh, look, some gum." My husband, I think, left it there.
I was surprised when you told me that story. What was happening?
Okay, so you're gonna go. So you're gonna go to some type of undergrad, and then you're gonna apply to an MFT program. They're often called CFT, Couples and Family Therapy, because it's more inclusive. But the actual licensure is called MFT. I don't know why there's a difference, frankly. There's amazing. There's lots of good programs. You want to preferably go to one that's co-AMFTI accredited, because it helps in the licensure process.
I would also say something to consider is asking a student who already goes to that program what their experience is.
And if they like it.
And if they like it. And something that was really wonderful in our program is it provided us with an internship program that was connected.
So, yeah. So do they help you find internship? Because you're going to need 500 hours during that time. Half individual and half systemic, so working with couples or families. And so if you have a program that's a built-in internship, it's much more helpful. If not, you come and apply to a place like us and you do your hours here or other places, right? There's like lots of places that take sites on.
And after that, depending on the state, you need a certain amount of hours.
Pennsylvania's 3,000.
In Pennsylvania, so after you graduate, 3,000.
Then you spend 3,000 hours to get your licensure, and you have to spend 3,000 hours and then 150 hours of supervision with an MFT.
And then you take a test about things that you never use clinically.
Yes. And then you're an LMFT.
And you win.
And then you win. But there's a million different things. You can have an LMFT. You can be an LPC. You can be LCSW. There's so many different ways to like be licensed.
Why did you choose LMFT?
Oh, for the sex therapy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I chose the program in general for sex therapy. Why'd you?
Me too. And for couples.
Yeah, yeah.
I really like to work with couples work.
So that's it. Okay. So cool. Yeah, if you want to do a couple, if you specifically know you want to work with couples and families, MFT is the way to go.
Highly recommend MFT.
That's it. That's the episode.
That was it.
So now if you want to transition in any of those ways, there you are.
But we're going to continue to do some Q&A episodes because we got a million questions. So if your question didn't get answered, tune in for another episode.
Yeah, there's 40 more on here.
Yeah, there's a million. So we'll definitely do another episode. If this was helpful for you and you think it would be helpful for a friend, feel free to send it on over. Don't forget to rate, review, subscribe, and it's now follow on Apple Podcasts. Thank you so much for tuning in. And remember, to grow yourself, you got to know yourself.
Hey guys, I'm Alana Dunn, and I'm the host of Seeing Other People. As an early Hinge employee, a modern dater, and now a fiance, I know the dating world maybe a little too intimately. I'm here to make you feel less alone in your dating journey, whatever it may look like. Don't have a date for tonight? No problem. Whether you're looking for love or just want to laugh and commiserate with others, tune in to Seeing Other People as we explore the roller coaster that is the ever-evolving world of dating.